Coverage varies by plan. View contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If you're driving a car or truck with an expired warranty and suddenly lost your transmission or needed a full engine repair, would a $4,000 repair bill leave you stranded? I'm Danica Patrick. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Choose the company I trust. Endurance. No matter the mileage, if your vehicle is less than 20 years old, Endurance offers comprehensive auto protection plans for any budget. Protection on the drivetrain, electrical, transmission, AC, and more. Plus, benefits like 24/7 roadside assistance and rental car reimbursement on any plan. Endurance handles everything from making the claim through the repair process to paying the certified mechanic of your choice. Don't get caught off guard with a vehicle breakdown. Act now and get one full year of Elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free.
Visit EnduranceWarranty.com for your fast free quote today. That's EnduranceWarranty.com.
Everyone has a fave Wendy's frosty flavor.
And when you're choosing from chocolate or vanilla, it's not that hard. But now there's all new frosty swirls and frosty fusions. So try picking your fave from Oreo Brownie Fusion, Pop-Tarts Strawberry Fusion, Strawberry Swirl, Brownie Batter Swirl, Caramel Swirl, and Caramel Crunch Fusion. Not so easy now, huh? For a fresh way to frosty, gotta be Wendy's. Open till midnight or later.
At participating U.S. Wendy's, hours may vary by location. Oreo is a trademark of Mondelez International Group. Pop-Tarts is a trademark of Kellogg North America Co., LLC, used with permission.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's cast, we're going to conclude our coverage of the War of the Beast, but more importantly, we're going to cover the effects of the War of the Beast on the galaxy at large.
Pretty big.
Yeah, it's mildly influential moment. It's not Horus Heresy, but it's not far. What do you think? War of the Beast, Horus Heresy, Fall of Cadia, which is the most influential? One, two, three. Heresy's one.
It's still, Horus Heresy's still one, and War of the Beast is bigger than Fall of Cadia.
Okay, there we go.
Because it structured the Imperium again.
That's true.
You know what I mean? We had two back-to-back restructuring of how the Imperium works.
That's fair. Because Fall of Cadia is like, and chaos. That's fine.
Well, Fall of Chaos is a big deal, but it's just part of the war. It's a super big part of the war, but it doesn't functionally structure. It doesn't have structural changes to how the Imperium actually works.
No, that's fair. All right. As always, the 40K Lorecast, the weekly show focused on the lore of the Warhammer 40K universe, releasing every Monday at 7 p.m. Please follow and comment in the cast if you like what we're doing. If you don't. I mean, that's fine. I appreciate it. But if you do like what we're doing, it really does help our algorithm out a lot and push us out to more listeners. So massive thank you, by the way. I've been telling everyone to do this for, 90-something episodes. And I forgot to say, hey, guys, thank you for making us the number one Lorecast on Warhammer. We've been that, by the way, for a long time, and I just kept forgetting the thank you all. So there we go. Thanks. It really is your guys' comments and your follows. It was moved us up the charts.
Only took us a year to tell you thanks. Yeah. Good job, guys.
Yeah, it's
when I say guys, I mean this guy.
Yeah, there it is. If you like the cast and you want to hear more about Brad, I click on the show notes. You can find our YouTube page with the 40K Lorecast. There you'll find old versions of the show converted to imagery with subtitles, our live Q&A sessions, and now our two other shows, The History of 40K with myself, Brad, and a guest, and Two Old Men and Their Handler with Brad, Brian Horton, and David Zuber talking a more competitive 40K. I'm not welcome in those conversations because Brad knows what I do in competitive situations of Warhammer.
Makes me angry.
Yeah. In the show notes, you'll also find a link to our Patreon. Thank you to everyone who's contributed already. I hope the improvements you're seeing in this show and now our expansion to YouTube have made it feel worth it. For those of you who want to support us and get our show ad-free, just go to Patreon, and for $4.99 per month, U.S. dollars, or 0.0014 Cougarants a month, hey, throwing it out there, it's available. Lastly, as always, our Discord, linked in the show notes. If you like this show and you like what we're doing and you want to interact more about it, or you have questions and you want to just find more like-minded individuals, come on in, join our Discord. Lore, literature, video games, gameplay, everything is all there. And massive thank you to the moderators because they're doing a hell of a job keeping it organized and keeping it easy to navigate. But with that,
and keeping it not on fire.
Not yet. All right, let's get to the recap. Let's get to the meat and potatoes of the show. So, three episodes, here we are. Humanity, despite having no Primarchs left, the Emperor entombed in the Golden Throne and being run by the most feckless group of individuals, the Lords of Terra, was doing great. It was all prospering and growing, all thanks to Rabute Gilliman, who was
dealing with it. Very fancy on that full name.
There we go. Because his first name, I wanted to call him Robert every time I see it for no good reason. And that's said by someone with a hard to pronounce last name. So it's shame. Anyway, massive orc invasion occurs, flips all of this on its head. The orc invasion pushes all the way to literally the skies above Terra, where the Imperium is saved by the combined actions of the Imperial Fist successor chapters, the Inquisition, and the Assassins. From there, they discover the source of the invasion is the planet Ulanor, which was the site of the last battle of the Great Crusade, in which the orc menace was thought to be put down for good by Horus, the Primarchs, even the Emperor.
It was not.
Later on, the Primarch Vulcan reappears in the galaxy and helps lead the force of Ulanor to destroy the orc leader, the Beast, after taking catastrophic losses, including Vulcan dying to kill the Beast. They think they've won. Upon returning to Terra, they discover they have not, and they have to go back again. The second time they go back with the new elite space marine force of the Death Watch and a new unique weapon using the Pariah powers, the Sisters of Silence, to create an anti-Wa weapon. It works, except that it totally doesn't. Well, no, it does work.
It does work.
And then they discover that there's more than one Beast, in which case Corland, the Lord Commander of the Imperium, dies in this moment, and the Imperium has to retreat again back to Terra. So that's where we are. So once again, we're starting an episode back on Terra. So
I swear to God, if you say Primarch again, though, we're ending this.
Primarch's going to come up later in the cast. Deal with it. Ugh.
I already know.
I know.
Spoiler alert for me. Oh, yeah. I've read it.
Brad has read the notes. Brad does. We do our homework for this cast after all. All right. So once again, we're back on Terra. The Imperial forces have come back with their tail kind of between their legs after an invasion of Ulanor that did not go to plan. This time around, though, it's way worse. The Lords of Terra are effectively collapsing on themselves. They're turning into anarchy because none of them knew how to lead.
Let's pause on this, because for most of the time before they realized how bad it was, the Lords of Terra are scheming against each other,
like
trying to chop each other at the knees. We didn't talk about this enough in the last episode. Even during this, they kind of try to position themselves to come out as the big gain. Like, my opponents are going to lose this much. They're still doing that.
It's because they're,
to a lesser extent.
It's because, to your defense, they are useless. And the problem with the Lords of Terra is that they assume every time these invasions go out to Ulanor that it's going to be a massive success and that the Imperial forces are coming back with the problem solved. And they're all scheming to find ways to make it so that when that praise begins flowing, it flows to them. And then what happens is they come back saying, oh, yeah, we went all out to Ulanor. We did not succeed. And these guys who've been sitting there saying they've got the parade ready to go. What is the cartoon where they're tamping down the parade? It's
Bugs Bunny ones. But
is it Bugs Bunny? I was thinking it was the Despicable Me's where the minions are ready to go. We're like, nope, not yet. That's kind of.
They also have that one, Despicable Me. Yes.
But yeah, that's what it feels like, where they're like, oh, yeah, I am the greatest. Oh, no, I actually had nothing to do with this. And that combo, it begins to just descend the entire Imperium down, because these are, like or not, the leaders of the Imperium. Things then get worse, though, because there's now a full court press put on the Imperium by the new Beast. Systems all across Segmentum Solar come under brutal assault by orc forces. Billions, trillions, quadrillions of orcs are now descending into the sector. And the Lords of Terra make all of this worse. They don't know how to respond. And so the head of the Imperial Navy successfully gets the entire solar naval fleet destroyed by misdeploying it and placing it right in the middle of multiple orc assaults.
These guys are so bad.
Luckily.
Boo.
Yeah. Luckily, the Space Marines had their own ideas. So after Corlin's death, the chapter master of the Fists Exemplar, because surprise, surprise, the Fists Exemplar is the one who's going to step up. Anyway, his name is Maximus Thane.
I just wanted to sound I knew you were going to say this.
Hate it.
I love it. This is like something I would choose as one of my main characters.
You would. This is exactly, you know what? That's right. This is exactly, I'm not going to lie. I play almost every RPG I have. When I have to name a character, he's named Bob. Like I'm saying 99% of the time, I name it Bob. Or if I'm running it as a female character, I've done it as Bobette. I think the last time I beat Fallout 4, it was a woman named Bob. I made some female version of Bob. So yeah, but you would go Maximus Thane.
Thane.
God. It's so weird about your Napoleon complex. Anyway.
I Googled it early. I said, this is how I'm living my life.
All right. So
I'm going to make me be in short of everyone else's problem.
Accurate. Well, everyone else except for the architects who have to design doorways, they love you. It's like, yeah. This building has a low ceiling. It does? Cool.
I didn't notice.
Yeah. It's nice. I can change a light bulb without needing a ladder.
Look, let's talk about why Maximus was pretty boss mode.
Yeah, so Maximus Thane is he's awesome. So Maximus Thane sits down and he reviews the actions. He looks back and says, okay, what did we do? And more importantly, what went wrong? And he realized the number one mistake Corlan made was working with the Lords of Terra. He just immediately goes, they're useless, and decides, I want nothing to do with them. And I'm not even going to involve them in anything I'm going to do. And so what
best thing that he did to start.
Yeah. And
he sees that when he looks over immediately and realizes that they're not just incompetent, but they're actively impeding the success of the Imperium.
Yeah.
Don't get them involved. They're actually a negative. I'd rather play a man down than have you in.
Yeah. So what he does, the first thing he does is what Maximus Thane realizes is that this is going to have to be a Space Marine problem. And I will say, if you're reading 40K books, whenever the Space Marines decide something's a Space Marine problem, it means this time it's going to work. Just 100% of the time. So Thane begins his actions. The first thing he does is he has to do something about the fact that there are no more Imperial Fists. With Corlan dying, Corlan was the last Imperial Fist in the galaxy. So technically they are an extinct species. In the time since Ardimentum, which is when all the Imperial Fists died in our first cast, and the second invasion of Ulanor, which was in our last cast, there have been no new Imperial Fists created, not even a neophyte. So he orders all successor chapters of the Fist to provide battle brothers for their progeny legion. And so soon 1,000 Space Marines are assembled and they all have their armor repainted yellow and black. Thane then leaves himself as chapter master of the Fist Exemplar and takes up the title of chapter master of the Imperial Fists. And the next
move. It's also pretty cool. I like what he does. I like and hate what he does because they parade out to just give a big middle finger to the Lords of Terra. Necessary? Probably not. But after that,
it was a good move because what he did was that the Imperial, there's an irony to this. So the Imperial, it'll get to some of the irony later. But the Imperial Fists had been since the end of the Heresy, they'd been the defenders of Terra. And so what he did was he paraded himself and his new fists all through Terra, showing we are here. And what this did was it helped halt the anarchy that was descending all throughout Terra and the system because the people looked up and said, oh, our protectors are actually still here. However, the Lords of Terra took it a very different way. And they recognized,
And I took offense to that.
Yes.
But I think the bigger thing that he did, you might say that for the populace, this is a big deal because it did quell a lot of things.
Yeah.
But the bigger thing that he immediately did, and I like this quite a bit, because looking through the actions of everything that's happened so far, he immediately picks up on the fact, which everyone should, because Marines are very unbelievably intelligent.
Yeah.
He goes, these are the people that I can work with. He goes, Vane Gourovitch, Fabricator Kubik, Wineland, the Sisters of Silence, Veritas. He basically goes, these are all the people that don't have their heads in their butts and we can get stuff done, and not only sets up alliances with them, but cuts everybody out. Doesn't even let them know what he's doing anymore. Like, you can't mess this up if I don't let you know we're doing anything.
Yeah, and then he actually does even better. He then uses them, namely the Inquisitors, between... Wien wasn't as powerful at this point, but Veritas was still very powerful, and Kubik and Van Gorich, obviously, to go influence the other Lords of Terra whose help he needs, namely the Imperial Navy and the Imperial Guard. So if they just go to... Van Gorich and team go to them and say, hey... We're going back to Ulanor, and by we, I mean you and all your forces. Let's go. And they head out. And this timing is critical because the orcs, Thane does this pretty quick. It is getting close. The invasion towards Terra is happening. The orcs are pushing and they're pushing. What's funny about this little side story that happens during this is during one of the raids where the orcs are pushing into the Segmentum Solar, the head of the Ecclesiarchy was on a planet that got overrun. And as he was dying, he then sends out a vox message to the entire Imperium saying, the orcs are actually our saviors. And
that was so
and as a result, a bunch of worlds who then report to the Ecclesiarchy decide, oh, we shouldn't resist the orcs. We should embrace the orcs. The orcs then took their sticks and murdered everyone on those planets. So,
do not run away. We are your friends.
But this is why Thane has having to move so fast, because stuff like that's happening. We are seeing it's not just like the resistance of humanity is starting to break, which is that's the game. So for the third invasion, Thane again decides to take tried and true tactics and improve them. This time, as we said in the last cast, the GW likes throwing things at things. That's a key part of Black Library and Codex reading. And the last time they threw derelict spacecraft, that worked okay. But this time they decide to step it up and they decide to use the orc tricks against themselves.
Big old rocks.
Yeah. Because this time I'm not getting caught in a trap. So he grabs asteroids and begins firing asteroids at Ulanor, which I assume was similar to the opening of Starship Troopers, right?
And we're watching The Expanse.
Yeah. I'm going to go with Starship Troopers. One of them had Denise Richards in it. The other one didn't.
I mean, yes.
Calling it out. Anyway, look, man, that movie came out when I was in the height of puberty. So it's not.
Well, let's talk about the apparently to beat the orcs, you got to think like an orc. Because they start throwing all these asteroids in, but one is a super sneaky asteroid.
Yeah, so this was funny. So the Space Marines are dropping these asteroids all over Ulanor. It's working. The shield has fallen. There are now asteroids crashing into settlements. And then this one kind of shiny asteroid lands right outside of Gorkograd, and it's not a real asteroid. Surprise! Out pop all the Space Marines because they turned it into their own attack moon. And it does. It actually wrecks the city. And these guys all come rushing out of it, drop pod. Because to be fair, Space Marines do love a good drop pod assault. I mean, the rules haven't... Every time the rules let us have it, it totally breaks the game, makes it incredibly unfun and unplayable. But in the lore, it's awesome. Oh, no, deploy.
Also, let's talk about something that they also brought, which for... 2-3 books at this point in time, they just forgot existed. Hey man, we're in a fight for our lives, a fight for the state of the Imperium. Yeah. Oh yeah, we should probably bring the largest spaceship that we have.
Yeah.
The Phalanx comes back. Where was this for the longest time? I don't know. Getting detailed. They were getting.
You're right.
They put some new rims on it.
When the orc is above Terra, the Phalanx is, you're right, getting a paint job. So anyway, so they decide this time to bring the Death Star. Maybe that'll help. And they just drop it right in orbit. And that helps, obviously. But now they're on Ulanor and the Fists are making their determined run. This is it. We are going to end the orcs once and for all. You know, it's actually working. Thane and basically every named character from every single book up until this point is there. And I mean that, like Veritas is there, Wienand is there, Kubik is there. Everyone that they've ever mentioned who hasn't died in a prior book is in this. And it's like 100 pages of what we call bolter porn. If you guys don't know what that is, that just means it's whatever GW just wants to write about a space marine jumping over a rock, firing a bolter into something, and then doing a second somersault into kicking something. It's not badly written. If you're into it, it's awesome. But it's effectively, when I read it, it makes me think of Batman from the 60s, where it's every time a space marine does something, yeah, kapow, boom. Although I guess, to be fair, there's no scene where the space marines have a surf competition against the Joker. It's not that bad.
Bat shark repellent.
Oh, yeah, bat shark repellent. That show was terrible. Anyway.
Oof. This is effectively the defense of the White City from Return of the Kings. Everybody that is anybody is here.
Yeah.
And ready to rock also. To their credit, they are kicking the crap out of everybody during this fight.
They are. And Thanos' forces, this is the one that goes well, because in traditional writing, like, the third time's the charm. So Thanos' forces, their drive right to the heart of Gorkhagrad. And thanks to two prior visits, they knew exactly where they needed to go. So that's pretty helpful. But in order to perform their anti-Wa trick, they had to combine some captured orc psykers with pariah powers of the Sisters of Silence. Not surprising, as the battle progresses, the orc psykers start dying until they reach the inner sanctum with only one orc psyker remaining, because, ooh, drama. Anyway. Upon arriving at the heart of the temple, though, they do come face to face with the great beast again. Great beast again. Thane and crew engage it in combat, but Thane knows he can't kill it. There's no scenario that even he, he's a space marine. He's 9 feet tall, maybe, probably closer to 8. He's big, but he's fighting a 30-foot tall orc in armor. This isn't going to go well.
Whoa, my friend. Mega.
Yes, right. Mega armor. So at
Selvin shorts.
They're just fighting to buy time and blah, 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 dodge and attack, blah, 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 jump away, blah, 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 grenade. And all this while the sisters perform the maneuver. And they pull it off this time, because of course they do. The sisters pull off the maneuver, and this anti-Wa energy flows right back through the orcs. It's so powerful that the beast's head explodes.
Sorry, I just... In my mind, it's hard for me not to go to have the beast realize, am I being kited right now?
Yes.
So that you guys can do something else?
Yeah. And so this time, though, the beast is dead for good. The Imperium is still in danger because, unlike Return of the Jedi, the orcs didn't just shrug their shoulders and go home. Hey, this is it's a really weird moment, by the way, in Star Wars, where the Emperor dies and they're like, all right, I guess this... We don't need the fleet. Although I guess technically episode 7 proves that, yeah, they did figure that out.
Yeah, it's still one of my favorites. Family Guy did it with we just killed them. We still outnumber them 5-1. No, you don't understand. We lost. Yeah. The Emperor's dead. The Death Star's dumb. But we have so many ships. I already told you, we lost.
Luckily, the orcs didn't subscribe to that method. And so while they lost the beast and a lot of the power going through them, they still do rampage throughout the galaxy. A lot of them do end up disappearing from Ulanor, though. I should mention that as soon as the beast goes, you do see a fracturing of forces and all the battles going on around the galaxy, because the beast was using his psychic power to drive them forward. And so orcs, as we've said before, tend to fight in large packs. And so if orcs are finding themselves outnumbered, or if it's not really a fight they care about, they'll just leave. And so that tends to happen, like Segmentum Solar, for example, where the defenses are really, really strong. They kind of bail, for lack of a better phrase.
The funny thing about this is, yes, they cut off the head of the snake. Things are going good for the Imperium, but also they're not, because they were being pushed forward. They were fighting in a way that was, you can understand, you know, what they were. They had a goal they were trying to go. After the beast is dead, the orcs just keep rampaging, but rampaging, roll the dice and see where it goes kind of way. And it's actually a little bit harder for the forces of the Imperium to deal with, because they're just now all over the place. Are they going to destroy the Imperium? No, but they're not great for the Imperium, and they're having a hard time rooting them out, actually.
Yeah, and so this becomes Thane's new job. With the beast slain, Thane and his forces went back to Terra. And the first thing they organized is a mass of crusades, plural. Because remember, these are fists. They crusade to clear out the orc infestations all around the galaxy. Because as we were just saying, thousands of systems are actively fighting the orcs. And they're fighting them largely with imperial forces, like planetary defense forces. There might be a guard regiment here and there. But this is not suitable for pushing back on orcs, who are 2 to 3 times the size of an average man.
And let's also talk about this. Because of all the things that they were actively trying to do, the beast had them hitting the logistic chains.
Yes.
Hive, aggro worlds, hive world, anybody that's wrecking the chain of feeding the empire is a big thing that they're doing right now. So I got my big thing out early too. So, but they are all in places they need them not to be.
Yeah.
So, and it's very, again, and there are a lot of them, so they have to do multiple crusades in multiple sectors to figure out how we get this back and how we stop this from, because as Thane can look at, what I don't want is the 67th Beast to show up or Beast Junior to show up. They need to clear this out while they can before it becomes a bigger problem.
Exactly, because the bigger the orc conflict gets, the more orcs that get there, the more powerful it becomes. And you could run through the segment. And to Brad's point, they're in really not great spots for the Imperium. But the orc threat is, of course, the least of the problems for Thane. That is once again about to be the Lords of Terra.
They suck so much.
So Thane's first action upon getting back, seeing what he has to do, is to increase the size of Space Marines. In almost 2,000 years since the end of the Horus Heresy, the Space Marine Legions have really spread across the galaxy, kind of doing their own thing. It's like they're all hipsters. They're in their little section. They've got really good coffee, really good avocado toast, but we really haven't, they're not part of society at large. They're just doing their own thing. I just like making these references because it bothers Brad massively when I do it.
Avocado toast.
So Space Wolves, the Space Wolves are just mastering avocado toast at this point.
Wearing a Golden Girls t-shirt over top of your power.
Which I'm going to go ahead and call it out. It's of the things hipsters are responsible for, avocado toast I like the least. It's not that good. It's fine. But what they've done with coffee, beer, whiskey, like distilleries, go hipsters, go. Anyway, so while it's a random tangent from John. While these Space Marine chapters have been keeping kind of tacit contact with one another, they're effectively just a horde of independent chapters doing their own thing. And Thane realizes that after the events of Ulanor, the Imperium needs the Space Marines more than ever. So he calls for a new Space Marine founding to begin. And hundreds of new chapters are formed as gene seed stocks are released. And this leads to almost an exponential growth of the number of Space Marines in the galaxy. Thane's idea was, I'm going to really rim the galaxy, the Imperium, or the realm of the Imperium, with Space Marines. And this way, there will never be another War of the Beast. And anything that does come up, we can snuff it out quickly because we're not going to be relying on the stupid Lords of Terra. We're going to do it ourselves.
And the thing is, it's also, he made it so that they were doing more joint ventures. Because I talked a little bit about last episode. A lot of the Marine chapters were just kind of YOLO soloing it all the time. Yep. They were just only doing their thing. Death Watch helps with this a lot. We did go back to 7071 because they start putting beacons all up over the entire galaxy
exactly.
to get rapid response teams.
It does. But the more important piece to what Brad was just saying, that, you know, the individual chapters might talk to each other. But the problem with Space Marines is that if you've got a chapter, it's at most 1,000 Marines, but some of them might only be a couple hundred. Which actually is not enough to stop an orc walk or what's going to be coming later. They're going to run over instantly. So having more of them and in constant communication means they can have more joint attacks, more joint forces. And this timing's really fortuitous because...
I want to jump all over this because you're like, why would it be fortuitous that we just got run over and so many things got killed? And they made it to Sol twice. Why this is such a huge, great thing for them is they realize the weakness of the defenses of the Imperium. They realize the weaknesses of the way we can defend across the galaxy. We were very slow to react. And why this is so fortuitous is because this is thousands of years before the Necrons or the Tyranids. Chaos had not made their big pushes yet. At this point in time, Chaos hadn't been seen in forever. So this is, it was early enough to change the entire way that we defend, patrol, and respond to threats to the Imperium. And also we realized that if you see a Lord of Terror, you should just punch him in the throat and move on with your life. But... But I'm saying you're so right on the timing being so fortuitous, because if this was, if this was modern day 40K, well, the game would be over because everything's dead, because they have the worst response. We didn't have enough Marines. We didn't have enough Marines available to inner chapter
support.
Support, yeah. Sorry. But yeah, this is such a big deal, because if this was any other, if this was even 2,000 years later, when we started getting Abaddon's big pushes, when Abaddon showed up,
Abaddon would have run through them. I mean, the orcs,
100%.
The War of the Beast is massive, but it's still orcs. It's not, the orcs weren't as organized. I mean, let's really talk about this, because we're still a few thousand years, actually many thousands of years, like 7,000 years, I think, at this point, before the Necrons and Tyranids emerge. But Chaos is lurking. There's already been one Black Crusade. That was the one that killed Sigismund, but there's a much bigger one coming. And because of this, the next time when Chaos begins their incursion, we're also about to see the Eldar reappear. As they go to do this, there are literally tens of thousands more Space Marines than there would have been otherwise. Because the Imperium was in...
You beat me to literally?
Yeah, I did. We can't have you have all the literallys. So then... now the next...
That is literally not true.
So the next thing that Thane does is actually ironic because of earlier. He then decides that the Imperial Fists are no longer going to be the defense force of Terra. After parading across Terra saying, hey, we're here to be your defense force again, they went, actually, no, we're not. We're leaving. And this doesn't surprise me, because Thane wasn't an Imperial Fist. He was a Fist Exemplar. And so he came from one of the chapters that was on Constant Crusade. So... he might have just gotten bored. I don't know what it is. But as the new leader of the Imperial Fists, he decided his legacy is not to stand back, but to go forward and conquer the galaxy for humanity. So he declares the Fists are no longer going to garrison Sol and would instead join the rest of their brothers in taming the stars for humanity. And this 100% comes back to bite him in the ass.
What?
Because
let's talk about the fact that Marines are... fantastic conquerors, and then 11 seconds later they're like, what are you gonna do to fortify this? And they're like, what, why you gotta bring up old shit?
Yeah.
I'm going to the next fight.
Yeah. So although to his credit, Thane figures that out, because he says, look, the Space Marines are gonna conquer the stars, but we're gonna kind of afterwards leave. And I get it, if you're a super soldier wearing super armor, you don't want to sit there and have to build a farm. You know what I mean? Someone else can do that thing after we're gone. And so Thane just directs the Imperial Guard, the Navy, the Administrator, the merchant fleets, and more to go and effectively follow us. I'm going out. We're going to go conquer the stars. And then after we kind of jack these planets up, we need you guys to fix them and make them habitable. However, the last thing he does is he realizes that someone back on Sol, actually back on Terra more specifically, has to follow through on all the stuff he wants done. And he looks around at all the people and says to himself, I have the perfect person. Fangoric, the head of the assassins. I'm going
to
ask.
Level-headed, yeah. Good to go, probably really good at building and resupplying.
Yeah, so he leaves the head of the assassins with a very specific command. It is, here are the things I need done. Make sure the Lords of Terra do it. That's it. That's all he tells him. He leaves, and Vangoric steps into this new role and begins trying to figure out what's the best way for me to do what's best for the Imperium. And in Vangoric's defense, he really was, in the onset, very aligned with what Thane wanted and agreed with Thane.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
40K Lorecast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Fiscally responsible, financial geniuses, monetary magicians. These are all things people say about drivers who switch their car insurance to Progressive and save hundreds. Because Progressive offers discounts for paying in full, owning a home, and more. Plus, you can count on their great customer service to help you when you need it, so your dollar goes a long way. Visit Progressive.com to see if you could save on car insurance.
Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Potential savings may vary. Not available in all states or situations.
Coverage varies by plan, view contracts and exclusions at endurancewarranty.com.
If your car is out of warranty, one major repair bill could wipe you out. Just ask Ludacris.
Car breakdowns can wreck your wallet. Without endurance, a worn out timing belt could cost you $1,700. A busted transmission, that's $4,000 easy. An engine meltdown, $7,000. But if you've got endurance, you could never pay out of pocket for a car repair again. With endurance, your car's most expensive parts are covered. Plus, you pick the mechanic you trust to do the work. With endurance, your rate stays the same no matter how many claims you file.
If your car is under 20 years old, Endurance has you covered with unlimited miles. Plus, your plan includes 24/7 roadside assistance anywhere in the country.
So who's going to pay for your next breakdown? You or Endurance?
Choose the name Ludacris Trusts. Endurance. Right now, get $300 off any plan, plus a year of elite benefits, a $2,000 value, free. All backed by a 30-day money-back guarantee. Get your free quote at endurancewarranty.com. That's endurancewarranty.com.
He begins, though, pretty quickly coming to the conclusion that the Lords of Terror are irredeemable. He is a true spy master. He figures out what everyone's up to and discovers it's all a lot worse than he thought, especially Kubik, because all the other Lords of Terror are just trying to enrich themselves. They're like, oh, cool, that war's over. I like to go be very wealthy now. I'm going to go ahead and do that, maybe kill some rivals. But the one he can't figure out is Kubik, who's the head of the ADMEC. Kubik has been kind of weird this whole time because he supports them in all their engagements, but he just keeps to himself, and Van Gorich couldn't quite figure out what he was up to. But with the War of the Beast finally concluded, Van Gorich doesn't have to also worry about orc invasions and is able to really dive more deeply into this and discovers the ADMEC are a nightmare sea for him. Kubik, yeah.
It's so many mad scientist laboratories.
Yes.
Going on with absolutely no care for anything.
So what Van Gorich discovers is that after the defeat of the Beast at Ulanor, Thane ordered that Ulanor be exterminatist. It had to be, and the ADMEC agreed to do it. And what the ADMEC agreed to do was use their new teleportation technology to warp Ulanor into a sun. Because Thane's viewpoint, and he's correct, is it even we already scoured the surface of Ulanor. The Emperor did that with Horus. And the orcs still came back there. This planet needs not exist anymore. So the planet has disappeared.
Air quotes.
Air quotes, yeah. Well, no. Yes. The planet did disappear. It did not go into a sun. Kubik and the ADMEC, after the failings of the attack moon sitting above Terra, figure out how to teleport something. And they decide that they need more time to pull apart all the orc technology. And they teleport Ulanor to a system in the upper right corner of Segmentum Solar. That
because ADMEC gonna ADMEC.
Yep. And they needed, and they want this way. Their idea was, we'll put it in an unsettled system. No one will know. And then we'll just go there and we get all the time in the world to take apart all the technology. The problem with the ADMEC and everybody else is no one really knows what everybody else is up to. The reason this system hadn't been settled by humanity was not that there was something wrong with it, it was in the queue. And in fact, there were colony ships already heading to this system.
Which kind of noticed a planet showing up.
They got there and there was this perfect planet there. So Kubik and the ADMEC did actually have enough time to rip all the technology out of it. But the human settlers do arrive not that much, a few hundred years later, and fully colonize Ulanor. Getting back to what that one's going to be called in a little bit. Van Gorich sees this treachery. Well,
it's still alien planet. What's
486? Yeah, LV-46. Van Gorich discovers this whole thing and loses his mind. But he decides he has to act. Not just against Kubik, but against all of them.
I was going to say, he doesn't say, I'm going to act against Kubik. He goes, hey, man, have you ever seen The Godfather? Because I think what I'm going to do is take care of everyone. Who's everyone? I said everyone.
Yeah, this is literally, whoever wrote this had just watched The Godfather, or just it was their favorite movie, because it's the exact same scene. Immediately throughout all of Terra, every single Lord of Terra either dies or capitulates to what's about to happen. And Coombe, actually, no, he did. That's right. No, that's not true. He did kill all of them. That's right. They all died. Some of them died. Some of them he put assassins who then took their place, like Weekend and Bernie style.
Right.
Yeah. A friend said he Weekend and Bernie.
They're all dead. Yeah. I was like, you're like, whoa, whoa, whoa. I'm like, no, everyone died.
That's right. Yeah.
It's just a couple of them. They put the Mission Impossible face on and pretend.
No, we're not doing Mission Impossible. We're doing Weekend at Bernie's. We're both old enough. We're doing Weekend at Bernie's. They both, come on. Like, no, I'm not giving this.
Flopping her.
Yeah, this is way more fun. So every one of these assassinations goes off without a hitch, except for Kubik. Because Kubik, because of where he is and him being also the head of the ad, makes it much harder. So Kubik basically is tracked down, though, by Van Gorick and a few assassins. Van Gorick tells Kubik to hand over all of the knowledge to him, the master of the assassins. He gives him a choice, and he says to him, if you don't give your information to me, I'm going to infect you with a virus that's going to spread to all of the ADMEC, and it's going to effectively destroy the ADMEC. If you do, I'll just kill you, and you'll be okay. Afterwards, Kubik decides, nope, and just kills himself right then and there, before anyone can act. The good news for the ADMEC is this prevents Van Gorick from getting control of the ADMEC because his subordinate takes over. The bad news is he's the only one that really knows the true fate of Ulanor at this stage. And so it's lost to the Imperium that, hey, Ulanor is actually sitting in Segmentum Solar. And
whoopsie-daisy.
Yeah, we'll cover that in a little bit about how that settlement goes. But the funnier part about this is, as Van Gorick's doing all this, Thane's aware of it. Thane and the Inquisition are both
and the Inquisition
are both well aware that the head of the assassins just murdered every single Lord of Terra and are now again weakened at Bernie, a bunch of them. But in classic Imperium fashion, they looked at it and said, "Well, what's Van Gorick up to?" And, well, he's doing everything you told him to do. And in fact, we're running more efficiently than we were before. And everyone went.
I really feel that this actually sets the table for how the Imperium now works for the last 9,000 years, yeah. Which is you can do crazy shit as long as you meet all quotas and don't ruffle any feathers. You're like, is that guy supposed to be in charge? No. Are all the buses running on time? Are all the shipments getting there? Yeah, whatever.
Net positive. However, over time, and they don't really explain why this happens, by the way, it just does, Van Gorick's mind starts to go. And he starts to become very paranoid, very jealous. And his assassins stop going after people who are resisting the goals of the Imperium. And they're just getting anyone who Van Gorick, I think this was meant to be more like Stalin. Is I think who they were trying to make this after is that Stalin took power after the death of Lenin.
And then started erasing people from actual portraits. Yes.
Which, by the way, if none of you have seen the movie Death of Stalin, go watch it. It's quite funny. It's very, very, very well done. Anytime Steve Buscemi is in a movie about the worst part of Russian history, it's probably going to be good.
The part where they talk about the pictures is so good. Yeah. It's like, there was another dude in that picture.
No, he wasn't.
No, there wasn't.
No, there wasn't. Yeah. Movie's really good. But anyway, this continues unabated until Thane and his Imperial Fists return back to the system. And when they get back to the Sol system, they discover that the Imperium has shifted. What was originally Van Gorick moving and actually improving anything, it's now moving back towards disarray. And so Thane demands Van Gorick account for all of his actions, effectively, what is going on here. And Van Gorick basically goes, and runs away. And he runs to the Eversor Temple that's in the North Pole, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, because GW writing, of course, it would be in the North Pole.
Santa Claus, baby.
Yeah. And Thane has to go do something about it because he did start this.
This is some crazy Kill Bill stuff because in the writing, everyone dies.
Yeah, I'm not.
Everyone.
I'm not a huge fan. So this one. All right.
It was killed.
I'll power through this. So the Imperial Fist with Thane invade the Eversor Temple. And again, Eversors are not a fun fight. At the end of this, every single Space Marine, except for Thane, is dead. Every Eversor, with the exception, of course, Esad Wire, is dead. And Van Gorick. So Thane is standing in front of Van Gorick, and he has the greatest assassin in history to his side. And then Esad, at this moment, basically breaks the shackles of control that Van Gorik had over him and says, peace out, and leaves. And Thane shoots Van Gorik dead.
Yep.
It's a terrible writing. I'm just going to say it. But this does effectively now, that is, from the book's standpoint, the end of the War of the Beast.
However, cooler stuff happens after the War of the Beast, though.
Yeah, that's...
Because you had all of these proxies, which were just Van Gorik's fingermen, basically all his puppets, are all there.
Yeah.
And Thane has to take care of all this. And, well
Thane can't.
They're not super cool about it.
Well, Thane can't. That's the problem. So, as we just said, Thane arrived back on Terra, and everyone he arrived with is dead. So it's just him. And now we've got... He's killed Van Gorik. But the Lords of Terra, that who are, you know, the puppets of Van Gorik, are all still very much so there. So Thane has to get out of town quickly before they murder him, because he would have gotten murdered. They could have sent the assassins after him. He would have died. And
well, it's only assassins out there too.
Yeah. So you still do have,
like, this is supposed to be Ted.
Yeah.
But it's actually an assassin.
Yeah. So all the Eversors are gone, but that still means the Vindicaries. We still had Venoms at this point. Kalexi. They're all there.
The Calidus, the face changers were all there.
Yeah. So he bails. And while he's gone, for the next almost 20 years, Terra falls into anarchy. It's a complete mess. All the Lords of Terra just begin infighting. It's getting worse and worse. And it's actually saved by the Ultramarines, because who else would do it, by the way? Of course it's the Ultramarines.
Also, they go into full cleanup mode.
This part's awesome. Ooh. So the Ultramarines show up with effectively every single successor chapter, and which is now the effect of a full legion arrives in orbit above Terra. And they just say, hey, all of you are going to stop infighting, or I'm going to personally declare you as heretics, and we're going to invade and slaughter you. And the backstabbing stops.
With a quickness. Yes, yeah,
pretty sudden. They all go, okay, I'm going to go ahead and leave now, if that's okay with you. Maybe. And new Lords of Terra and a new Council of Terra are elected. At the same time, I should point out, the Custodes did nothing.
Absolutely nothing.
This whole time, the Custodes have also been on Terra, every now and then lifting up a blind, looking out the window and going, they're not touching the temple, and put the blind back down and went back to guarding the temple.
This is finally a really big thing on this, though.
Yes.
Actually, this might be the biggest thing that came out of them, is when they reform the council, they make a spot for the Custodes.
Exactly.
Which is gigantic, because, oh yeah, remember the fact that Sol is supposed to be this unassailable, no one could come even close to Terra? Well, people have been just showing up on Terra, and they effectively said, hey, Custodes, it's not just the palace that you have to protect. Everything about the Sol system.
I have to caveat this a little bit. So let's go with the positive and we'll get the negative. The positive is, yes, they add a seat on the Lords of Terra for the Custodes, which means the Custodes, who, by the way, are smarter than Space Marines. So now we do have someone on the Council of Terra who is genius. The only thing smarter than a Custode is a Primarch. And one of those Primarchs is Angron. But you do actually, that's mean to Angron. One of those Primarchs is Mortarion, who I love. But this in theory would then involves the Custodes in the defense of Terra and makes it better. However, I do have to foreshadow a little bit. When Goge rises to power, the Custodes have gone back to hiding and doing absolutely nothing.
This is a good idea, though. But you get to modern 40K, which does have the Custodes taking an active role in the defense.
Right. But that's still post Sisters of Battle. That's what I'm saying. It's like it's a weird writing mechanic, because we have this story where the Custodes rejoin the Lords of Terra. Or it's like the Custodes join the Lords of Terra. Oh, cool. So the Custodes are involved. Yeah, but nah. I mean, it's great Australia.
They don't make a lot of meetings.
Yeah, I'm going to throw out one of my favorite sayings from Australia. Yeah, nah, yeah. It's just that's kind of what happens here. But that's not the only effect of the War of the Beast. The next one is more on what it proved, which is the Lords of Terra could not be trusted. And so,
because they are a pile of poo.
Yes. And each Lords of Terra then actually goes the wrong way here and begin to do an even bigger job of solidifying their power. Because after seeing what happened with Van Gorich, they begin to actually work even more to insulate themselves and protect themselves because they don't want to get murdered by the head of the assassins again. So they then start scheming to protect themselves even better than before, which is kind of how Gouge ends up rising to power much later. It's because of this type of insulation that happens amongst Lords of Terra. They're no longer working with each other at all. So I would actually argue that post this, the Imperial leadership is more fractured than it was even before.
I agree with that because we actually continue to get that. This is why I think it has such rippling effect, because this is how we get each branch of the Imperium being their own thing. And the only thing that even keeps them together is the unbelievable layers of bureaucracy that form around keeping these different branches even connected at all.
Exactly. So from there, I want to talk about the effects on the Space Marines. There's a couple that come out of this, one of which we haven't touched on at all. So you guys can get a fun long story told short. So we'll start off with, obviously, the new Legion of the Death Watch. The creation of the Death Watch is a massive boon for the Space Marine factions, because we covered it. As we covered in those episodes. First off, it takes a ton of responsibility and logistical challenges away from the Space Marine chapters, because they're broken up by the second founding. They were still designed as a catch-all. Every Space Marine chapter was meant to be kind of self-sufficient. They can take on all comers, whereas the Death Watch were specific. They were made specifically to handle Xeno threats and specifically made to do small incursions. This is something that the Space Marines couldn't do. Also, I would argue, and we see this in the game Space Marine 2, the effect of serving in the Death Watch significantly improves the Space Marines. They become better soldiers because they begin cross-training. 100%. They get better knowledge. Everything. The Death Watch makes the Space Marines better.
Yeah, that's a huge thing in the way the Space Marines operate now, because every time they get a Death Watch back, they are required. They expect them to give out. As soon as Billy gets back from the Death Watch, you're supposed to be giving all of that new knowledge, that knows new tactics, the new weaponry, the new whatever, into your
chapter. All the new weaponry. Don't forget, some of it's a big...
My bad. Not all of the weaponry. You're talking to the Inquisitor or your chaplain. You're like, I don't know what you're talking about. I've never seen any of this. All the tactics and the things that they're supposed to get, it makes the chapter stronger. And they keep doing that. And they keep giving their best of the best back. And then when they come back, rising tides raises all ships. Mm-hmm. So the Marines actually just become a better fighting forces just by having this.
Another big one that happens is the increase in the number of Space Marines. Thane orders this new founding. And whereas the prior foundings had expanded the number of chapters, the fourth founding really wasn't as much an expansion of chapters. It did exist, but the biggest piece that happened was kind of a refilling of the troop numbers. Because as the relative peace had spread throughout the galaxy, that happened right before the War of the Beast, the recruitment levels weren't as aggressive. What you saw, as we've talked about in a lot of our Space Marine casts, the Space Marines would only choose a few people to be allowed through the process. And I would argue at times, looking at you, Space Wolves, they became a little bit too selective. And they would only take the absolute perfect and best. And what was happening was that resulted in their numbers not really increasing. Between Thane's direction, but also just the knowledge that hit all of the chapters of what happened to War of the Beast, it became more apparent that they needed numbers. And so the size of the Space Marines went up. And this is also because with the War of the Beast, this is the first time humanity's fought something that could really wreck a regular human. They realized, hey, we need more super soldiers. The Imperial Navy and the Imperial Guard just will not be able to handle some of these things. Or if they do, we're going to lose millions of them at a time. And this this timing is really good, because in less than 50 years, so that the War of the Beast ends right about 550 of M32.
And Abaddon's almost 632.
So within 50 years, Abaddon launches the Second Black Crusade, which would have honestly wrecked the Imperium if the War of the Beast hadn't happened.
100%.
But
they were not ready for it. We were infighting. We were actively trying to stop each other to get personal gain, for sure.
Now, one side story that occurs in All the War of the Beasts, and people who've read the books have probably been upset that we haven't covered it, so of course I'm covering it now, is a really great story about a chapter falling to Chaos. And I wanted to cover this here because we get a lot of questions in the Discord about, like, how does Chaos get more numbers? And this is actually how they do it. They convince chapters to fall to Chaos. And so we're going to tell a quick story, but it looks like we're going to tell a long story quick. While the War of the Beast is occurring, there's a very strange alliance that occurs. Orcs were all over the galaxy. And in one area, this great orc, Wah, actually found itself attacking Iron Warriors, who, again, traitor legion. The Iron Warriors got overrun, and they had to retreat from the orcs. And they eventually found themselves in a situation where they had orcs attacking them on one side and Black Templar attacking on another, and then Imperial Fists coming in. And the Iron Warriors looked around and said, look, can we get a truce, guys, to the Imperial Fist successors, and actually the Black Templars, but side note there, because they knew if they all fought each other, the orcs would kill them all. And so they agree not to align, but to stop shooting at each other initially. And it helps. They're actually able to repel the orcs. But as this War of the Beast is going on, the orcs' conflict continues to grow and grow and grow until the Iron Warriors and the Imperial Fists find themselves basically back to back firing at the orcs. And for the first time ever...
Also, it's a cool story in this because a lot of this is written from the POV of a warsman.
Yeah. And what ends up happening, and I do like this story because, I should have mentioned. Remember, the Iron Warriors are not a corrupted legion the way the Death Guard, the Emperor's Children, the World Eaters, the Love of God all are. So they look, you know, they look like Space Marines. The Iron Warriors, despite being traitor... still, they don't have a large number of possessed in their army. So if you're a Space Marine and you see the Iron Warriors, they look like you. They might still have the beak armor, but that's about the only thing. So
this is also thousands of years before all of the demonic engines start showing.
Exactly. So the Iron Warriors look like just a regular chapter, but they are, in theory, traitor. And I see the in theory is the part that begins to infect it. And this conflict, by the way, is on the far side of the galaxy. And this alliance, what happens, they begin fighting together with Iron Warriors and the successor chapter begin fighting together. And it's the successor chapter is ironically the Fist Exemplar, which is where Thane came from, by the way. So it's an important one. And as this conflict goes, Zerberian, I can't pronounce this correctly, Zerberin, who's the leader of this Fist Exemplar, becomes closely aligned with a warsmith, warsmith's what he really is, Kalkor, who is the head of the Iron Warriors here. And they begin fighting side by side and succeeding. And Zerberin fails to really see the heresy in Kalkador. What he sees is a fellow soldier who just wants to do what's best for his soldiers.
Well, it also, each time that he does something that could be considered heretical, he does it while they're winning a battle against the orcs.
Yep. And so that's what happened is all of the things Kalkador does that are in theory bad are for the, they not only save Kalkador's troops, but also Zerberin's troops. And there are Iron Warriors sacrificing themselves to save Fist's Exemplar. And this begins to make Kalkador question the truth of the heresy. And it's not because he's being manipulated, although by Chaos, because he actually wasn't. Well, he may have been a little bit here, but it really was him just watching the actions of someone he was told is the most evil creature on Earth.
This is again when, why did you keep letting Chaos be a secret to most everyone, including most Marines? Yep. Because if he knew about this, well... spotted some
exactly because some of the things that Zerberin missed were the cultists and some of the dark arts being performed. He didn't know what they were. There were people following them who did have marks on their skin, but he didn't know what they meant. They were doing these rituals, which he doesn't know that the warp exists. So Kalkador just thinks, oh yeah, they're just praying and it's working out. Cool. That's convenient. But eventually this story has to come to a sad conclusion. And the sad conclusion happens after the Beast ends. And the Black Templar arrive. And the Black Templar pulls Zerberin aside. you know, the guy you've been talking to is a traitor, right? I kind of need you to go kill him now, or I'm going to kill you because I'm assuming you're with him. The Black Templar give him two choices: kill Calcador, or we will purge you. And Zerberin takes option three. He pledges his loyalty to Calcador, and he and what's left of his troops become traitors. And they effectively, I believe they join the Iron Legion, the Iron Warriors at this point. This is the first recorded time since the Horus Heresy of a chapter falling to chaos. And I like this story because this is what ends up happening more and more as we go through. Because as Brad was saying before, the Space Marines don't really know about chaos. They don't understand. They just think these guys, it was a revolution. And this isn't like we're Americans, we'll use Civil War. This isn't like a soldier from the South with a soldier from the North, who both were just poor people who ended up joining forces. Now they're shooting each other for no reason. No, one of these people has the power of the dark gods flowing through them. And maybe yes, you should tell someone that.
Yep.
From there, I want to talk more about the effect of the War of the Beast on the Imperial citizens. And this is one of the biggest ones post-War of the Beast, because it changes how the Imperium functions. As we said before, the Imperium was always a massive propaganda machine. It has been since the pre-Great Crusade. This is...
Yes, yeah. Hold the phone, yes, my friend, because we had propaganda in lowercase, which after the War of the Beast, the propaganda became all caps.
Yes.
And also how they went about it. And they also made it so that if you are not one of us, you as an Imperial citizen shouldn't just tell on them. You should be shooting people in the streets kind of thing.
Yeah.
This is the truth. Everyone needs to do this. The propaganda was, they turned that to 11.
Yeah. And so the Imperium needs the Imperial citizenry to fall in line. And so they're looking for better ways to do this. And after the success of the Proletarian Crusade, where they convinced tens of millions of them to go grab a kitchen knife and try to fight Nork with it, they go, oh, this seems to work really well. And the power struggle that's going on with the Lords of Terra, after the death of Van Gorich, the ecclesiarchy starts to come out pretty far ahead. Because the other Lords of Terra could wield economic or military power, the ecclesiarchy realized they could wield the power of populism. And within...
I would say the power of belief.
Yes.
You know, and that, well, it's so powerful. What I mean is,
but they have the numbers, and that's what the game they begin to play. And so the ecclesiarchy leans in hard on this. Let's get as many people aligned with the emperor is the god, and I am the voice of that god, as possible. And this actually, to be fair, I can't do it. I just,
to be fair, there
my face cracks when I try it. Thank you. This actually is quite beneficial for the Imperium in the short term, because at the end of the War of the Beast, chaos is about to reappear.
I know we say it so crazy on that. It's short term. It works for like thousands of years.
Yeah, exactly. A couple thousand years short term.
I know. Yeah. It's just like short term. You're like,
it's
pretty long.
It actually technically is still working. But yeah, what they're able to do is, because the Imperium, remember, they can't tell the Imperial citizens about chaos, as we've discovered. We'll cover the First War of Armageddon at some point. But what they do is they align the Imperium behind the golden light of the Emperor, which helps them convince people to hunt down people who are doing heretical actions, corruption, all that kind of stuff. They don't have to tell them that these people are actually agents of the dark gods. They just say, this person's not doing what the Emperor tells you to do. Let us know. It does also set up Goj Vandir coming up later. But for now, short term, it's pretty good. It's also really, really good for the Inquisition. Because the Inquisition, yeah.
Hold on. Because it's so funny because you have it as the Inquisition got split into Ordos Malleus, which was the anti-chaos.
Yes.
And then and what we just formed, which was the Ordo Xenos, which is the anti-alien, because we have an alien, a Xenos threat, yep, that was worth doing. But they didn't go, hey, you guys go here, you guys go here. No, they went, let's double Andor, I think it got
they may have
way
tripled.
Bigger than double.
That's what I'm saying.
It's so
they split in the sense that before there was one head of the Inquisition, now there were two heads of the Inquisition who immediately recruited enough people to fill out entire Inquisitions below them. And
right.
The Ordo and the Ordo Malleus have the Grey Knights already. The Ordo Xenos now get the Death Watch. This is massive growth. And this is also, again, kind of beneficial for the Imperium because the Xeno infestations grow quite quickly and there's about to be a lot more of them. And so thankfully, the Death Watch come into play because you're about to get Eldar coming back into the galaxy. They're here, but they're about to realign. Right about now, as I can't pronounce his first name, Vect. Vect comes back.
Vect.
Vect has now taken control of Kamara, and so you have to see more raids. So thankfully, we've got the Death Watch who are now here. The Tau are still not important at this stage. Some things don't change. But one of the greatest lasting legacies, though, beyond all of this, is Ulanor itself. So Ulanor, the new system that it has teleported into, is the system called Armageddon. Ulanor becomes the main planet within Armageddon. Now, the Admech had successfully stripped the planet of technology, but they didn't strip it of resources. So as these colonists arrive... It's a massive planet. So these colonists arrive in a system, and there's effectively a bonus planet there. And this bonus planet is larger than every other planet and is actually not that far off Terraform, because don't forget, the Imperium already colonized it at the end of the Great Crusade, and they terraformed it then. The orcs did some damage, but the orcs didn't turn into an irradiated wasteland. So they come in there, which ironically, of course, they turn into a hive world, which makes it an irradiated wasteland, but that's not important for now. The Imperium turns this planet into Armageddon, is what they name it, because it was still a little bit rough thanks to all the orc technology. There was some weird stuff that happened there, but it was a massive planet. And congratulations, Imperium. You just put the greatest orc beacon in the entire galaxy in the same system, or the same segment, not system, as the same segment as Sol. So they draw, and man, does Armageddon do it, draws all the worst parts of the enemies of the Imperium effectively right into Segmentum Solar. But I'm not going to finish this cast without talking about the orcs. So let's talk about what is the best part of the entire game, the orcs. Now,
Give the thing for the Croak today, because this is a big thing online.
This is.
Whether it's orc or Croak that did the boar.
And it's not. It is an orc. And so the reason why people get confused by this is they should. And honestly, I was too. It was corrected. There's a random book that gave me the information on this. So you have a giant orc who's very smart and has incredible psychic powers. And so most people think that the beast was a Croak, and that if an orc gets enough power going through it, the orc will turn into a Croak. And we're actually helped. It's a later book, and I forget the name of it, but there was an El Farseer who actually explained to humanity, no, the beast was amazing, but he was nothing compared to a Croak. The Croak were larger, smarter, way more powerful. The beast was really nothing more than a very powerful war boss.
Specifically, psychically powerful.
Yes. The Croak were an almost perfect race. The truth is the beast is not that far off from Gazgul. They're pretty similar, the beast and Gazgul. So just for people who are wondering, I will try and find the book and leave it in the show notes somewhere. But it was an Eldar. If you don't, just Google it and people have it all over Reddit. But there was an Eldar Farseer who gave them this story, which does help feed the narrative that Gork and Mork, in my mind, were more likely the last two Croak. That's what I think Gork and Mork really were. They were the final Croaks, and then they died, however, and it became that. But remember we talked about the Primorks on the last one? It's so bad.
You know what? Hold on. I'm getting my chi together. I'm actually focusing. I'm meditating. Yep. I'm floating right now. You know what? I'm going to ignore that you said Primorks again, and I'm going to talk about they could be the founders of the Orc clans.
Yeah.
And the Orc clans are cool as hell.
Orc clans are awesome. Yeah.
The Bad Moons, Shooty Orcs, Blood Axes, Sneaky Orcs, Evil Sons, paint things red because red goes fast. Everyone knows that.
Yes.
Deskulls, the luckiest orcs, who also love looting things, and they don't do enough of it in the current game. I'm not going to go there.
I know.
Snake bites. You say of the spiritual ones, but these are the guys that want, that think that newfangled technology is making us soft.
Yeah.
And then you got the Goths.
Yeah.
Which is the current default for orcs, because that's where Gazgul's
from. I struggle with snake bites, candidly, because I don't know where they fit in. Like, I said, bad moons, shoot. Blood axes, sneak. Evil sons, go fast. Death skulls, sneak. Goths, hit thing hard. What do the snake bites do that's different than any of those?
They're squigs.
Okay, so hit things hard.
But I'm saying they should, in my mind, a snake bites army should be just
beast boys.
Chock full
of. Yeah, just beast boys, beast snagger boys. Yeah,
okay. Beast boys, yeah. Beast, it should be that, and just squig riders and people.
Yeah.
And beast.
I guess it works. I just always have that. They're the one to me that doesn't quite fit in.
It's just, that's my favorite, just because I love the idea of these idiots going, these guys are using that newfangled stuff,
yeah,
and they're not tough enough, yeah, you know, and they're just riding beasts in.
Fair enough.
I mean, you know,
we both know like I'm John. A golf player. That's what I've,
yes,
that's just.
I mean, what you're missing is a good cavalry charge, though.
No, John. No.
A good charge.
I am still proud that I played in a major. I played 7 games and never one time shot a gun, because I play melee orcs, and I did have 150 of them, which helps. But anyway, the reason we brought those 6 up is, as you remember, the beast had the 7 banners with all the 7 statues. That's what he does. He actually founded these 6 orc clans, and these clans being founded create a massive problem for the galaxy, because before this, all the orcs were all orcs. Every orc group was just operated like orcs. Now you have specialized orcs. And these specialized orcs start creating a lot of problems all around the galaxy. Especially the Death Skulls, if I'm being honest. The Death Skulls are a huge problem because
they want to snag.
Yeah, because they're always snagging technology. And then the evil suns showing up and just overrunning your planet with their buggies, etc. Your blood axes were actually
looted vehicles, yeah, baby.
Blood axes are all over the galaxy, appearing, basically sneaking onto space stations and murdering people, because, and then it's fun. The bad moons, you just don't want to deal with bad moons showing up. +1 to hit sucks. And then the Goths become there. The Goths are a little bit of a problem. And then Gazgul occurs, and the Goths become a real big problem.
A bit of a problem. Yeah. Well, and this is the thing, is that before the War of the Beast came around, orcs were just meandering about.
Yeah.
And then from this point in history, the orcs become a regular WoG occurrence. A bunch of orcs get together, get together, WoG happens, you have to deal with it, but it keeps going over and over and over again.
Yeah. And this becomes just the routine of the galaxy. There are now going to be almost endless WoGs that the Imperium, now having learned their lesson, knows they have to go deal with. They can't wait for them to burn out. Because I don't know if you guys remember, very early on we discussed this. It used to be, when an orc WoG was forming, this is back when the Eldar still existed before the fall, the Eldar would see it happening and go, nope, and would just snuff it out.
And also instantly stuff it out.
Yeah.
The WoG wasn't even a WoG. It was a WoG.
Yeah. No. They might have got started drawing the A, and then boom, the Eldar are there. Now this becomes the Imperium's thing. And the Imperium, it eats up a lot of the Imperium. It eats up a lot of the Death Watch, but also the Death Watch can't even handle a WoG. So a lot of times the Death Watch have to handle the WoG, and they have to go and get the support of the Space Marines in the form of a crusade. And the reason I say that last is that this is the end of this episode. So we're going to call this, I think, is good enough coverage. And the reason I brought up Crusade is, in our next episode, I want to spend some time talking about the Crusades, what they are, how they form, who's in charge of them, missions, etc. Because it's something that we bring up a lot. And then from there, it makes it easier to tell some of more of the stories, once you kind of understand what a Crusade really is. Because they're more aligned with some of the Crusades of the Middle Ages, but with all GW writing, it's in line with what the Crusades were written to be, not what they actually were.
Oh my God! Quit ruining stuff.
No, it's fun. John reads a lot of history, and deal with it. That'll be next week. But I hope you guys enjoyed this coverage of The War of the Beast. We hope for those of you who've never read it, this was good information. We hope for those of you who have read it, you still felt we did it enough justice and covered a lot of the key parts. I'm sure we did not, and I'm going to get grief in Discord, which is fair. I always take it and try to improve next time. But until next week, this has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
Peace, guys.
Take care.